Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sammy Strutt, Head of Member Development for Bigger, and I'd like to welcome you to this Continue to Learn Extra webinar. I'm pleased to welcome today Andy White, Head of Work-Based Learning for the Land-Based Industries at Oaklands College. Today, Andy will examine how to use the morphological features to help in the identification of turf grasses and weeds. Andy has worked in the sports turf industry for over 39 years on both winter and summer sports, as well as golf, reaching the heady heights of course manager before leaving the industry to join Oaklands College. For over 20 years, Andy has been involved in writing learning materials for the Level 2 and Level 3, helping in both the development of the GTC training manual and the greenkeeping apprenticeships. He is an independent endpoint assessor for the Level 2 Golf Greenkeeper Apprenticeship Standard and is currently head of department overseeing greenkeeping and sports turf apprenticeships at Oaklands College in Hertfordshire. Please feel free to ask any questions via the chat function at either the bottom or top of your screen, and we will pose the questions on your behalf. And with that, I will hand over to you, Andy, and I will disappear.
Thank you very much, Sammy. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed today's session. What I want to do is have a look at how to identify grasses and weeds. You should be able to, if it's all a bit over the top for you, you should be able to access it afterwards on the Bigger website. So, well, I hope you enjoyed today's session. Let's kick off. So the aims of the session, as we've already said, if you're a golf greenkeeper on a level two apprenticeship, whether you're with Lantra or City and Guilds for your endpoint assessment, you have to identify five grasses and four seeds. If you're on the level three apprenticeship, then you're going to have to identify six grasses. Okay. Now, the five grass genera are fescue, poa, poa pratensis, smooth-stalk meadowgrass, perennial ryegrass, bent grass, and annual meadowgrass. In addition to that, apprentices at level two will need to identify 15 weeds on their own golf course. And I'll talk about how that will work in your EPA towards the end. But first of all, I'll kick off and have a look at some of these grasses and seeds. So, I always say to my students, please don't try and learn your grasses or weeds by just looking at the plant, you know, and just thinking, right, I've got it now, I'm going to remember that. Look at every aspect of the plant. Look at its growth habit. Is it creeping, non-creeping? Look at the grass carefully. Notice the features like the leaf shape, the leaf tip, the leaf texture. To be honest with you, you can identify the four main genera by leaf tip alone. So if you can learn that, you'll go a long way towards identifying on your EPA. Now, for those of you who are on the new standard, remember that you must pass the grass identification or you will fail the entire endpoint assessment. So it's critical that you do practice this and you are able to do it. Okay. Now, obviously for the higher grades, the botanical name, the full botanical name or Latin name, some people say, is used. To get a pass, you only need a common name. So obviously, if you struggle with Latin or botanical names, then learn the common names at least, and that way you'll get a pass. Do remember that today's session is learning and it's new learning, so you can record it as off-the-job training because obviously identification of weeds and grasses is part of your apprenticeship. Okay, let's have a look at the grasses and seeds in part one. I'll move to weeds in part two. So, quick introduction to morphology of the grass plant. I guess most of you may be familiar with that. So if we look, first of all, we have what's called the ligule. That's a little bit like a fingernail that is at the joint of the stem of the plant and the leaf blade. If you pull the leaf away from the stem, you will see the ligule. Now, on a fully grown plant, the ligule, the shape of the ligule, the size of the ligule can help in identification. But when the grass is cut to 5-10 millimeters, it's not always, it tends to adapt to the height of the grass, so it's not a great indicator. Further down from that, we have the auricles. Now, if you can see the one I've got a little mouse on there, you can see the auricles are like two little fingers that come out from the leaf blade and wrap themselves around the stem. That's very distinctive. Only one of the grasses that you have to identify, that is perennial ryegrass, has these ligules. So that's quite a help. The collars may be helpful as well in terms of the shape of the collar, the colour of the collar as well. So the collar is a bit around the base of the stem. And then we move on. We add the leaves themselves and the tips. So where my mouse is now, we can see we have flat, folded, boat-shaped, involute, concave and convex. So those are the leaves cross-sectioned. So they've been cut in half and you look at them from the front. And that's very helpful as well. And then just to the left of that, we have the leaf tip shapes. So there's various shaped tips. Sorry, hard to say that. We have pointed, we have flat rounded, and we have boat shaped. And again, I'm going to go through all those on the different grasses. And they are very, very key indicators, very helpful. So this is one of the grasses that you need to be able to identify. And it's smooth stalk meadow grass, Poa pratensis. Now, if you look at this grass, you can see that it's a distinctive color. It's like a blue-green color, glaucous gray almost. The leaves on this grass are very stiff. Not, you know, when you actually hold them, they feel stiff, almost like a stiff paper. They're very distinctive in that they have a groove or tram line down the center of the leaf, and that's very strong. It's like two, you look for the magnifying glass, you'll see two parallel lines that run from tip to base of leaf. The other thing about Poa pratensis is it has rhizomes. Now hopefully you all know that a rhizome is an underground creeping stem. So it's not a root, that thing where the point pencil is pointing, that's a new shoot. As you can see, there are buds along the shoot. So this grass is capable of self-repairing. So if you take a divot out, those buds are exposed to the light and they form new leaf tissue or new plants. So that makes it very useful in areas where you've got divoting going on, tees, fairways, etc. Now, if we look at the key features of this grass, it's a boat-shaped tip. Now, what do I mean by a boat-shaped tip? If I look here, the leaf is like that's the best way to describe it. Like the front of a canoe would be a good way of describing it. So it's a little hollow, so the leaf is concave. So we've got a boat-shaped tip, and we've got parallel tram lines running down the leaf, and we've got this distinctive colour. Take a little bit of the grass out the surface, and you'll also see that you've got these rhizomes. And again, that's very distinctive. So we've got those key indicators. The leaves are stiff, the colour is that blue-green, and it produces rhizomes. Now, in your GTC man, you may have some questions on this grass plant. What are the uses? Now, when you're on your EPA, when you're doing exam, you may get questions on the uses of the grass. So please try and make sure you learn at least two uses for each grass. So this grass could be used on tees, fairways, and the reasons for using it is it's extremely hard wearing, and it's very, very drought resistant. You will find this grass, if you're trying to find this grass to identifying on your golf course, one good place to look is on the banks of bunkers where you've got a lot of sand build up. It's very dry. You'll find this grass nearly always in that situation. So it's extremely drought resistant grass. And obviously that ability to self-repair. So those would be your advantages of this grass: hard wearing, drought resistant, self-repairing. So that's our smooth stalk meadow grass, as I say, Poa pratensis. Remember that all Poas have boat-shaped tips. So Poa annual will have a boat-shaped tip as well, which we'll look at later.
Bigger members work in some of the most spectacular scenery and landscapes anywhere in the world, and with most carrying some form of camera about their person, it's never been easier to snap a picture and get involved with our annual photographic competition. We're on the lookout for images from throughout the year that showcase excellence in greenkeeping, highlighting how a well-presented course can enhance the surrounding environment. Images of greenkeepers at work within the context of the wider landscape are especially encouraged. Each year, the winner of the competition receives a state-of-the-art piece of technology and a framed print of their winning photograph to be presented at the Bigger Welcome Celebration at BTME. 12 entries will also be selected for inclusion in Bigger's annual desk calendar, distributed to every course manager and head greenkeeper member of the association each year. To enter the competition, email high-quality versions of your photographs, along with your name, membership number and club name, to comps@bigger.co.uk before the deadline at the end of August. Head to the Bigger website to find out more. Links are going to be in the show notes. Best of luck to you.
Okay, our next grass is one of the bent grasses. Now, the two grasses that generally people identify are creeping bent, Agrostis stolonifera. Obviously, the name stolonifera comes from the fact it produces these very long rhizomes, very long stolons, which are overground creeping stems. So a stolon is an overground creeping stem, and the rhizome is an underground creeping stem. Now, key indication features, obviously, the rhizome, the stolons. The other thing is the leaf is flat. So it's a very flat leaf, and it's also extremely pointed. So the leaf narrows to a very, very sharp point. That's very distinctive of bents. And as you look at this leaf, you'll see that it's very finely veined. No tram line, no central rib, just a very fine veined surface over the entire leaf. So this is a very dull leaf. It doesn't shine in the sunshine. It's a very dull because that lining of the veins breaks up the light, so it reflects back to your eyes in a very dull colour. The other thing about the grass, it's got a panicle seed head. A panicle seed head means the seed head is very open. So that's quite distinctive of bent as well, if you're looking at bent grass in long rough. Now, what is interesting about the grass identification is it doesn't specify whether you have to identify the grass cut short or cut long. It just specifies you have to be able to identify the grass. So it might be that you have some areas of bent where you've got the seed heads. It makes the identification a little bit easier. There's nothing wrong with that, okay? So you could either go for a cut short or cut long. So why would we use creeping bent grass? Well, it's a very fine leaf, obviously, which gives you a very fine putting surface. Doesn't produce seeds at low cutting heights, like Poarania, so it gives you a good surface. It does produce an extensive amount of stolons, and that's something that needs to be controlled. So a lot of verticutting, scarifying, vertigrooming, just to make sure you get those stolons under control. But as I say, it's often used on golf greens, well, pretty much anyone on a golf course, really, greens, tees, fairways, roughs. Does self-repair from divot damage, which is really useful. And obviously another key advantage, it can take extremely low heights of cut. I've said they're 3 mil, but obviously with a new cultivar, some people cut as low as 2 mil. Personally, I think 2 mil is probably too low to cut and you're stressing. 3 mil, yeah, with a new creeping bent's fine. But myself, I wouldn't go below that, but I know that's a contentious issue. So that's our creeping bent, as I say, easy to identify because of the stolons it produces and because of the shape of the leaf and the fineness of the leaf. The other bent that most people go for is brown top bent or common bent, which had a little bit of a name change lately, Agrostis capillaris, used to be known as Agrostis tenuus. Most people use the name brown top bent rather than common bent, and that will be fine in your endpoint assessment, so I wouldn't worry about that too much. And the endpoint assessor might be lenient if you called it Agrostis tenuus, but try to call it Agrostis capillaris if you can. And you'll note again, it's a very fine leaf when cut short. And again, you'll notice this very finely veined leaf. And the question you're going to ask is, how do I tell the difference between Agrostis stolonifera and Agrostis capillaris? Well, Agrostis stolonifera produces stolons. Agrostis capillaris produces both stolons and rhizomes. So it creeps both underground and overground, which makes it a very useful grass. Now, again, the leaf blades taper to a sharp point, and that's the key identification feature with bent grass, is that sharp tapering point with a very, very finely veined leaf. As I said, no central rib, no tram line. The whole leaf is even in its appearance. It's finely veined on the upper surface, has both rhizomes and stolons. So where we would use brown top bent, widely used in sports turf, usually mixed with, or traditionally mixed with, Turing's fescue to produce a putting surface, but can be used on greens, tees, fairways, roughs, surrounds, pretty much anywhere on the golf course, to be honest with you. Reasonably wear resistant and reasonably drought resistant. So again, can be cut down to about 5 mil. Below 5 mil, Agrossis capillaris tends to start to stress. It's not as it won't take as low a height of cut as Agrossis stolonifera. Ah, now one of the grasses you need to identify, obviously, is annual meadowgrass. Now, some people consider it a weed grass, and technically that's exactly what it is. But obviously, you and I know that it forms predominantly most putting surfaces, sometimes up to 100%. And if you're on an inland parkland course on a heavy clay, you're going to expect lots of permanya. Perhaps if you're lucky enough to be working on a links course on sand near the coast, you're possibly going to keep it out the greens, but anywhere else, probably not. Now, it's a very easy grass to identify because, as you can see, it seeds all year round, and it will seed at extremely low heights of cut. You know, 3 mil, it will still produce seed heads. And you know when you've got it on your greens, because at certain times of year, you'll see the entire green surface almost turn white with the seed heads. Very easy to identify, though, because if you look at the seed head here, with this little yellow arrows, you'll see it's completely boat-shaped. I spoke earlier about the front of a canoe, and you can really see that there. You can see it's quite concave. If you look at the leaf sideways on, it also has a distinctive front of a boat shape as well, sort of canoe shape. So again, very distinctive. The other thing about it is sometimes on the new leaves, when you've got a bit of it cut a bit longer, the new leaves have little crinkles along the edges. There's a crinkle section, normally about five millimeters long, and that's a good indicator as well. It's a non-creeping grass, so no stolons, no rhizomes. It's what we call a tufted grass. Now, obviously, it will spread sideways by tillering, but tillering is different. That's a production of new shoots on the side of the mother plant. That's not the same as creeping. So Piranha, fairly straightforward to identify, even in low-cut turf. Just look for that boat-shaped tip and those seed heads. On the issue of identification on the EPA, some EPA may bring the grasses with them, and some may rely on you to point it out to them. Obviously, if you can do that and you know where there's patches of grass and you've practiced, then obviously you could take the EPA and show him those or her. Sometimes the EPA will ask you, they'll point to it and ask you to identify it. So it's worthwhile making sure that you can, under any circumstances, identify the grass. So the key features around your meadowgrass, we've got that boat-shaped tip. It flowers nearly all year round, and it's a tufted growth habit. As I said, technically it's a weed grass, but it's going to fill most golf greens, to be honest with you. And it does make a reasonable putting surface. It can be cut very closely. It can form a very dense putting surface and a very fast putting surface. The only problem is it's very susceptible to drought. It will drought out very, very quickly. And it is attacked by a range of diseases. Anthracnose, fusarium will devastate areas of the green if you've got a lot of piranha. So you have to spend a lot of money on fungicides to keep it at bay. So that's why a lot of people obviously don't like it and are trying to overseed with bent grasses that are more resistant. The other problem is that production of seed heads can affect the smoothness of the roll of the ball. So it's not great playing surface when it's seeding, and it does look rather unsightly. So from an aesthetic point of view, it's not great either. It prefers, as I said, a heavy or certainly a fertile soil. So clays, any soil where you've got a lot of nutrients, and it doesn't have a particularly high wear tolerance. So it's not a great grass, to be honest with you, but it's something we basically we have to put up with. The other grasses that we need to identify, fescues. Obviously, there are lots of different fescues. One of the most common ones would be Chewing's fescue, or Festuca rubra combutata, rubra meaning red, and there are quite a lot of red fescues, a slender creeping red fescue. There's the Chewing's fescue. There's a strong creeping red fescue as well. The thing about Chewing's fescue, it is a tufted grass and often will form little clumps, so it's quite easy to identify, particularly in the roughs. Key features, obviously, for all fescues, it's this very, very fine needle-like leaf. The tip is extremely sharp, just like a needle. The leaf is actually rolled. So if you were to unroll this leaf, it would actually be quite wide. Now, the rolling is an adaptation from where the grass is normally found, which is coastal areas or high moorlands where you get a lot of drying wind. So by rolling your leaf, you lessen your exposure to drying wind, but you can still carry out the same amount of photosynthesis. So as I say, it's an adaptation the grass has made. It's evolved to that shape, but it does make it very distinctive. You can see when you look down on the surface, it just looks like very fine hair. Very, very easy to identify. And if you put the leaf between your fingers, it will roll nicely. Yeah, because obviously it's round, so it rolls very easily. So that's another nice little identification feature. So the needles are needle-like, the leaves are needle-like and rolled. When the grass gets much larger, if you're not cutting it, it's sort of, you know, 6-7 inches height of cut, then the leaf will become a lot larger and less rolled. But under close cutting conditions, the leaf is very much needle-like. Widely used grass plant, it will produce a very fine playing surface and it can be cut down to 5 mil. Below 5 mil, most fescues will suffer and start to stress out. Used on most sports pitches, football, hockey, golf tees, greens, roughs, fairways, etc. It does prefer dry, infertile soils. Now, interesting point about fescue is it's very drought resistant. And in the last couple of years, people have been asking why fescue is dying out. It's very drought resistant, but it doesn't tolerate very, very high degrees of heat. So once you get above sort of 29, 30 degrees, it will start to suffer badly. As I say, it will survive drought, but not heat. So that's an interesting point with global warming. It prefers infertile soils, which is one reason why a lot of golf greens don't tend to contain much fescue, because they're fed a lot of nitrogen to keep the bent and the poa looking good, and hence the fescue tends to just stress out. Reasonable wear tolerance, as I say, and does produce a very fine putty surface. If you ever have a chance to play on a somewhere like La Hinch or somewhere like that, you'll find very fast fescue surfaces. As I say, if you're on inland parkland course on heavy clay, fescue is probably not the right grass to be using. Sorry, skip by. Another common grass, this is one you'll find on your fairways, perennial ryegrass or Lolium perenni. Now, this is very easy to identify because as you walk down your fairways, you will see clumps of grass that shine in the sunlight. Now, that's nearly always going to be perennial rye. And the reason for that is the back of the leaf here, you can see a distinctive feature of it is it's extremely smooth. Well, there's two distinctive features of the back of the leaf. One is this central rib that runs all the way down the leaf from tip to bottom. And the second feature is the back of the leaf is extremely smooth. Now, what that means is when the sunlight hits that leaf and bounces back, your eye picks that up as a shiny surface. So unlike something like a bent grass, where the light is broken up by the texture of the leaf, with the ryegrass, it bounces straight off. None of it's absorbed. So you see that as a shiny patch of grass. So you can see the photograph in my hand. It's really shiny. The other key feature of perennial ryegrass is when you strip it back to the base, you'll see it's a purple red color. So it's a purple basal shoot. So the shoot of the base, or sorry, the base of the shoot is purple. And again, it's a non creeping grass. It does tiller, but it does have, it has no rhizomes and no stolons. The tip is pointed, so it's a little bit like bent, but slightly less narrowing. So it's more rounded end than bent. But again, the distinctive feature, so you can't mistake it for bent really, is this strong rib, which bent does not have. And obviously the fact it's got this purple basal shoot, which is a major giveaway. One of the other things it's very good at is producing these seed heads. You can see the seed head here. It's what we call a spikelet. So very distinctive. This is the one that your mower blades never cut. It's extremely difficult to cut because it lies down, the mower goes over the top of it and it springs back up again. So that's another distinctive feature. So again, leaf tip pointed, back of the leaf very shiny. Strongly ribbed down the center, the seed head as a spikelet shape. Basal shoot is purple. So uses, if you get that question or exam, why would you use perennial ryegrass? Well, it's extremely hard wearing, which is why you'll find it on football pitches, rugby pitches, really hard wearing grass, very drought resistant. Yeah, so that's a great key feature as well. Normally used on areas of high wear, football fields, golf tees, roughs, etc. It will tolerate close mowing, but not, you know, sort of down to about 6-7 mil really with the new cultivars, but not much lower than that. Ideal for tees, ideal for fairways to, in some respects. The only problem with it is quite a rapid growing grass, so you do have to do a lot of mowing on it. But other than that, it's quite disease resistant. The only disease it really gets is red thread. Other than that, it's not much that will touch it. Newer cultivars come out all the time, so I think it's a grass that's got quite a future with, you know, warming and drier conditions. The fact it's so drought resistant could make it a very useful grass in the future. Lastly, just a quick look for those on level three. One of the grasses of your six you could identify, Yorkshire Fog, Holcus lunatus. Very distinctive grass. It's obviously a weed grass. Patches of very, very coarse grass, sometimes on tees, greens, occasionally fairways. Quite distinctive. You've got a soft, hairy leaf with a striped stem. I say it's a weed grass and it usually grows in clumps. So leaf blade, pale greyish green, narrowing to a fine point. But the distinctive feature is it's very hairy and it feels like velvet to touch. The veins of the basal leaf sheaths are pinkish red. So if you strip the plant apart and get right down to the base, you'll find these pinkish red stripes around the base of it. The flower heads are white to a sort of pale green, and it has no rhizomes or stolons. Okay, so that's the grasses. I'm sure some of you got some questions on those at the end. The other thing that you've got to remember is you need to identify the seeds as well. Now, obviously, depending on how the endpoint assessor gives you the seeds, makes a big difference, because if he gives you them all in one go, or she gives them to you all in one go, you can go by size. If you get them one at a time, you need to be a bit more savvy and think about some of the morphological features of the seed itself. So there's four grasses you need to identify: a fescue, a lolium or rye, an agrostis or bent, and a poa. The poa will obviously be smooth stalk. So again, don't try and look just at the image. Try and remember the shape of the seed. Is it tear shaped? Is it long, thin, etc.? The size of the seed and the end of the seed. Has it got a hair on it, which is known as an awn? So at the college, we provide students with a card with all four types of seed on so they can practice that. You've probably got this seed in your workplace, got bags of seed somewhere. It's worthwhile getting that out, get a handful out, separating it out, and just having a look at the seed and trying to make sure you can identify it. Perhaps make yourself a little card so you can practice all the time. And remember that size only works if you can see all four seed at the same time. And each endpoint assessor does it differently, so you never know what's going to happen. So here we are, grass seed, perennial ryegrass, Lolium perenne. Now, this is the biggest of the four seeds you're going to identify. It's a very large seed, and it looks like a bit like a dugout canoe. You can see the seed here. Looks like someone's got in there and hollowed it out. That's very distinctive. and it's got rounded ends as well. It's not sharply pointed. It's a blunt end to each seed with this cut-out section. As you can see there, it's quite a large seed. You know, we're talking 3 to 4 millimeters long almost. Bent grass, very easy to identify. Very, very, almost looks, always reminds me of pepper dust, a very, very small seed. The seed, when you see it in a pile, has a sort of mottled appearance to it. You can see different shades. Very distinctive. You can see it there. Very, very tiny seed. So if it's a seed and you're looking at it, it's tiny, 1 millimeter or less, you know it's going to be a bent. Now, fescue, again, fairly easy to identify with the others because it's large, like the rye, about the same length. The only difference is this is a much more teardrop shape and the ends are very pointed. And if you notice on some of them, there's this very fine little hair that sticks out the end of the seed, which is known as an awn. So you can see it there nicely. So again, a nice, easy seed to identify. Just look for the one with the sharp points and the hair, you know you've got your fescue. Now, the meadow grass, you can get confused between meadow grass and bent, particularly if you're not seeing them together. The thing about the meadow grass is it's that intermediate size that can confuse. But it's longer and thinner than bent grass. And also it's in cross section, it's triangular. So if you roll it between your fingers, you can feel it clumping because there are three sides to it. So it sort of goes bump, bump, bump as you roll it around. It doesn't roll smoothly like the other seeds. So that's a little key indicator. And it's also got a slightly teardrop shape to it. So that helps as well. So again, the only way you're going to do this is to put the seeds side by side and practice until you know for sure which seed is which. Remember, if you fail any of those seeds, you fail the entire EPA. So just make sure you can do it. Okay, now turf weeds. Interesting. You have to identify these during your course and you won't reach gateway until you can do it. On the endpoint assessment, neither of the endpoint assessments actually ask you to identify any live weeds. However, occasionally photos of these may appear in the endpoint exam. Normally they'd be fairly common ones like dandelion, clover, etc. But it is worth noting that you can identify the most common weeds, which I'm going to go through today. And as I say, you've got to identify 15 weeds on your own golf course anyway, and your assessor won't sign you off for endpoint assessment until you do, or at least shouldn't. So we're going to have a look at some of the common weeds and how we identify those. So as I said before, I'll repeat it. Don't just stare at the weed and think you're going to remember it. Look closely at the growth habit. Is it rosette? You can see here, typical rosette shape. Or is it creeping, i.e. covers a large area with no defined shape? Note the features, the leaf shape, the texture, the edge of the leaf, the color. Don't be fooled by the flowers because they can look very much alike. Creeping singlefall has a flower that's almost exactly the same as creeping buttercup. So if you sort of look at it, you think, oh, there's a buttercup for that. But no, look at the leaf, look at the whole plant and make sure you don't get confused. The other thing is I meet a lot of students who, if I show them a daisy, will immediately tell me it's a daisy because there's a flower there. If I then pick a patch without a flower or take a leaf, they are completely clueless to what it is because they haven't looked at the leaf, they've just looked at the flower. You can't guarantee that when you do your weed ident, it'll be in flower, or the photo you get will be in flower. So look at the plant as a whole. And remember, any time spent studying weeds or learning about weeds can count as off-the-job training.
Did you know that Bigger, alongside our partners ICL, offers a fantastic continue-to-learn scholarship opportunity for our members? The scholarship invites 5 Bigger members along to attend the Continue to Learn at BTME education programme. Worth approximately £500, the scholarship comprises 3 nights of hotel accommodation and 15 hours worth of education. The application process takes place during July. So head to the member opportunities section of the Bigger website to find out more. Links are in the show notes.
So let's run through some of the common weeds. We've got the first one here, common name cat's ear, botanical name Hypocarus radicata. So have a little practice with those pronunciations. Can be difficult. In one of the EPA exams, they only give you the Latin name. So it's worthwhile learning the botanical names of some of the most common weeds, because you could get caught out. So common weed would be something like daisy, dandelion, clover, etc. So how would you identify a cat's ear? Well, fairly straightforward. It looks a bit like a dandelion. It's that rosette shape. The only difference is the leaves are extremely hairy. And if you look at the end of the leaf and you pull a bit off, it's supposed to resemble a cat's ear, hence its name. The lobes are deep and rounded. You can see there. Unlike a dandelion, I'll show you a dandelion in a minute, it's completely different. So this one's covered in fine, like all the cat's ear. So, Hypocarus radicata. Now, this one, obviously, you would consider to be a common weed. And if you can't identify this one, well, we've got a serious issue. So, dandelion, Taraxacum officinale. As you get, practice that pronunciation. So if you can't pronounce your weeds very well, or can't pronounce Latin names very well, what I tend to do is tell students to break it down. So if you look at that, Taraxacum officinale. Officinale means useful to man. That's a brief translation. One of the things about dandelions, the reason they're useful to man is you can eat them, you can make tea out of them, all sorts of things, but let's not go there. So how to identify it? It's a rosette growth habit. So it's rounded, it's not creeping. Now dandelion means, it's French for teeth of the lion. So you've got these very sharp teeth on the leaves, and the teeth cut right back almost to the central rib of the stem. So that's a very distinctive feature. And the teeth all face back to the center of the plant. Unlike the cat's ear, which people sometimes get confused with, there's the cat's ear. And what happens? The lobes point away from the center of the stem. So the difference here. So that's our dandelion. So again, very common weed. Depending on the situation where it is, they can look a little bit different, but they're very straightforward to identify. Now, here's a weed that often people mistake for dandelion, which is not easy to pronounce at all. Even I find this one difficult, but it's Scorzoroides autumnalis. So try saying that with a mouthful. So its common name is autumn hawkbit. Now, I can see why people sometimes mistake it for a dandelion. But if you look closely, the key feature is the lobes, or these little bits that stick out from the center stem, are much deeper than on a dandelion, and they go right back to the central rib. And we have far less of them. It's not so much a lion's teeth anymore. And also they generally point at right angles away from the stem, unlike the dandelion that point back to the center, or the cat's ear that point away. But the key feature is the fact they've got these very long, narrow ends to the leaves, yeah? So we'll say, don't confuse it with dandelion. The other thing about it, much more of a clump of leaves than a dandelion. So Scorzoroides autumnalis is its botanical name. Okay, another common weed that might well appear in an EPA exam as a photograph. Daisy, Bellis perennis, again, easy to identify in flower. You know, everybody knows how to make a daisy chain, a daisy flower, etc. But what if you get a photograph without the flower head? Look at the leaf. It's almost a spoon-shaped leaf covered in very fine hair. And the edges have little tiny serrations on them. You can just about see it there. So it's worthwhile going out, finding a clump of daisy in flower, and then picking out a leaf and having a good close look at that leaf. You can obviously see it's a creeping growth habit, so it forms large clumps. But again, if it's in flower, obviously very distinctive. Here's another one, another common weed, yarrow, Achillea millifolium. Milli meaning thousands, obviously, so millifolium, thousands of leaves. And you can see it's a very, very fine leaf texture. Very drought resistant, this weed. If you want to find this weed, the best place to look on a golf course is on banks of bunkers where the sand's built up. You always find it there. I can guarantee you, you'll probably have it on at least one of your bunker faces. Very, very drought resistant, loves dry soils. Again, a creeping plant will form, you know, quite invasive, will form clumps. So Achillea millifolium, yarrow. Now, here's a great example of a weed that can really catch you out. This is mouse ear hawkweed, or Pilosella officinarum. It tends to generate these rosettes depending where it's grown. You can see here is a long stolon, and they will then generate a rosette like this. Under close cut conditions, it will generate a large clump like this. Now, the nice thing about it is they're both very distinctive because you've got this leaf that's covered in these extremely long white hairs. And the back of the leaf is a very light white color. Can be quite invasive, can take over large areas quite quickly. So it's worthwhile getting on top of. So yeah, mouse ear hawkweed is its name. Another common weed you'll find on your golf course. This is Cerastium fontanum, or common mouse ear. Again, another creeping weed. Leaves, very fine and hairy. Why is it called a mouse ear? Well, if you take one leaf off, hold it up, it's supposed to look like a mouse's ear. Obviously, in the old days, they didn't have much imagination. What they saw, what it reminded them of, that's what they called it. So common mouse ear does have this tiny little flowers, white flowers, a very star-like white flower. So very easy to identify. Now, this is one that most people never even notice, and you can see it on golf greens quite a lot, and it completely passes most greenkeepers by. It almost hides amongst the grass. When it's cut really close, you know, 3-4 millimeters, it forms this incredibly dense, tight patches. Here you can see on the left hand side, you can see it not close cut. On the right, you can see it very closely cut, and you can see it. All of this clump here is pearlwort. To the edges is the bent grass. So you can see it, it's sort of almost very difficult to see. It gets its name pearlwort from these tiny little white flowers that are pearl shaped. So tiny little white flowers, hence the name pearlwort. And the botanical name is Sigina procumbens. Now procumbens means to lie very flat, procumbent. And that's what it does. It lies flat against the ground, hence its name, Sigina procumbens, or pearlwort. To say, nice, easy one to identify. Nothing really looks anything like it. Birdsfoot trefoil, Lotus corniculatus. I can always struggle with that one. Corniculatus. This is one of the legume type weeds, so like the clovers, very distinctive. It has this bright yellow flower, and the leaves are broken into three sections, like a clover. All clovers are in three sections, and this one also is in three sections. It's not a member of the clover family, but it does have that similar leaf shape. Obviously a creeping weed, you know, it's not tufted, it creeps on creeping stems. Very easy to identify. This is a clover. This is what's called Trifolium dubium. Now dubium means suspect, a little bit like. So in effect, this is a lesser trefoil, or suckling clover is its other common name. It is a clover. You can see the distinctive three parts to the leaf that all clovers have. The flowers are yellow and a lot smaller than on white clover. So Trifolium dubium. So Trifolium, free-leaved, okay? That's what it means, Trifolium, free-leaved. So it's sort of telling you, basically, it's a free-leaved plant. Again, a creeping plant, can spread very quickly, often found in quite dry areas in the roughs. The distinctive feature with Medicago lupulina, or black medic as it's known, is this distinctive very dark purple, almost black V shape on the leaf. That's really, really distinctive. And the leaf is almost heart shaped. Again, another distinctive feature. It's a creeping weed, obviously, creeps on overground stems, stolons, but easy to identify. And obviously everybody's going to get this one, the white clover, trifolium, free-leaved, reptans. Reptans means to creep. So it's a free-leaved creeping plant or white clover. Why is it called white clover? Because the flower is white, simple as that. It's a quite a large, probably about half an inch across, pom-pom-like flower. You can imagine a pom-pom on a bobble hat, that sort of shape. And it's white. Really great for bees. Bees love it. Produces a lot of nectar. It's a plant that produces nitrogen in its roots as well. So it's a plant that will actually enrich the soil. That's why it's used by farmers a lot. But very invasive, quite difficult to control. So you need to get on top of it. Distinctive features, obviously, free-leaf clover and this white little V on the leaves. So black medic has the darker V on the leaves. White clover has the white V on the leaves. So note that distinctive white band. It's a very straightforward plant to identify, really. Hopefully you will all know that one already. Now, this is an interesting one. It's Dove's Foot Cranesbill, Geranium moll. Now, you think, where does it get its name, Dove's Foot Cranesbill? Well, okay, back in the old days, everybody recognized what a dove's foot looked like because they ate them. And this shape of this leaf is supposed to resemble the feathers that are around the foot of a dove, and they do if you ever see a dove in real life. And the crane's bill comes from this flower. You can see here the flower head. It's got a round base, and out of that comes this long pointed bit that looks like a beak. So the whole thing together looks like a crane's head. It's all like a heron, if you like. So that's where it gets its name from. Dove's foot, crane's bill. Very distinctive. Obviously, there's not a lot else that looks like this. This very distinctive, almost round leaf with these deeply cut sections around it, deep serrations. Again, creeping plant, tends to creep on the overground running stems. Very easy to identify. This one, field wood rush, is another one that can go unnoticed in fine cut turf. But it's not a lot of people think it's a grass. It's not a grass at all. It's a rush. How do we know it's not a grass? The leaves are arranged around the central stem in groups of three. That does not happen on grasses. In grasses, the leaves are wrapped around the stem in pairs. So it's not a grass. It's a rush, Lazula campestris. And the giveaway, obviously, is the fact that, as I've already said, the leaves are in groups of three. And also, if you look closely, you'll see little white hairs on the leaves, and particularly around the base of the plant. You can just pick them out here. Very fine white hairs on the leaf. And the leaf tips are always slightly bruised, almost purplish colour. So that's a bit of a giveaway, because obviously it doesn't like being cut. Let's say, very distinctive plant, often found in, not normally in golf greens, can be, tends to like, it can survive quite droughty conditions, but tends to prefer moist conditions. Another common weed you'll see quite a lot, self-heal Prunella vulgaris, meaning common, so obviously that's what it is. Creeps quite quickly and forms large clumps, quite invasive. Distinctive features, well, you've got a very purple, almost imperceptible, right around the edge of the leaf, there's like a slight purple tinge to it. The other thing it has is a really deep, bright purple flower when it flowers. That's very distinctive, very attractive to bees as well. Again, does have medical uses, but we're not going into that today. Does form these dense mats of cover. So again, worth getting on top of control wise. But yeah, self-heal Prunella vulgaris. Hopefully most of you will know this one. This is a broadleaf plantain or greater leaf plantain, which is Plantago major. This one you're easy to find if you go to any area that's compacted on your golf course, walkways, pathways, that sort of area, perhaps coming out the sheds where you're always driving on the same spot, you're going to find this plant. It really thrives in very compacted soils. So very easy to identify. all the plantains have this pineapple shaped flower head. You can see it here, and you'll see on all the plantains that similar flower head. Very distinctive rosette growth habit with these very deeply veined leaves. Really easy to identify. Second, ribwort or narrowleaf plantain. Again, another plantain. We've got these, it's Plantago lanceolata, which is means lance-like. So the leaves are very long and thin. Again, you have that pineapple shape seed head that you get with all plantains. This one will tend to grow in most conditions. It's not like broadleaf plantain, which does well in compacted soils. This will grow pretty much anywhere. But very distinctive. Again, got these, if you look at the back of the leaf, you can see these really, really strong veins. If you pull the leaf apart, the veins will actually sort of separate out from the leaf, and you can pull one section of the veins sort of hang out of it. It's easy to identify. Now, another plantain, which is very common, but often people don't notice it. It's very small. It's called a buckshorn plantain or Plantago cornicornor. I hate this one. Coronopus. Thank you. That was difficult to say. Coronopus. Again, very rosette habit. Why is it called buckshorn plantain? Well, the leaves are supposed to look like the antlers on a young deer. And a young deer is called a buck, and hence buckshorn plantain. Again, you've got those pineapple-shaped seed heads. So you're remembering now that all the plantagos, all the plantains have these pineapple-shaped seed heads. Very distinctive. There's no one there. So this one, again, nice one, easy to identify. Common sorrel, Rumex acetosa. The nice thing about it, it's got this notch at the back of the leaf, a bit like the back of an arrow. You imagine the notch of an arrow. It's exactly the same. So quite distinctive. There it is there. It's also got quite a shiny, glossy leaf surface. It's a creeper, so it grows in large, dense mats. Normally grows in fairly acidic conditions, but not necessarily. And this one is sheep sorrel, Rumex acetosella. Very easy to identify because you've got this almost like a club shape here, like on the pack of cards, you've got the ace of clubs. Very similar shape. And you've got these two projections that come out at the base of the leaf that make it a very distinctive leaf. Again, a creeper, so it forms dense patches. Knotgrass, probably again, this one, like broadleaf plantain, is the one you're going to find on lots of areas where it's compacted. Usually you find this in goal mouths on football pitches in really, you know, local parks, etc. It's an extremely compaction resistant plant, and it produces these long, very, very strong shoots. So it produces these stolons. They're very tough, and that's where it gets its name, knotgrass. It's called Polygnium avicularis. But it gets its name knotgrass because in the old days it would wrap itself around farm machinery, and it was a pain in the backside to get, you know, you'd have to spend hours on wrapping it all. And it was really difficult because it's very hard. You'd have to cut it off. So that's why the farmers called it knotgrass. So again, very distinctive, very distinctive. It always has this large clump with these runners going everywhere. Bulbous buttercup. Okay. One thing for a start, strictly speaking, it's not a bulb, it's a corm. When you pull it out of the ground, it's a very swollen corm at the bottom. That always tells you you've got bulbous buttercup or Ranunculus bulbosus. So it's a rosette growth habit. See there? The leaves are split into three sections, a bit like clover, and each of those sections has little serrations on them. But the key factor, as I say, is the leaf shape, the fact it's rosette, and when you pull it out of the ground, you have this swollen corm. You can't really go wrong. So Ranunculus bulbosus. Creeping buttercup, again, look at the leaf, not the flower, because it may not be in flower in the photograph. In the photograph you identify in the exam, should it come up. You can see, again, the leaf breaks into three parts. Each of those parts really breaks into another three parts. So you've got the leaf, and you've got one, two, three, leaf 1, 2, 3. So you've got three parts, then you've got three little points. Obviously a very bright leaf, supposedly in the old days, the tale was if you held it onto your chin it made your chin slightly yellow with a petal, that proved you like butter, apparently. Anyway, just another little memory aid to try and identify it. But yeah, really bright, glossy flower. And that distinctive three-section leaf shape. And the center of the leaf, you'll notice there's a little black spot. That's also quite helpful in identifying it. And this one, Creeping Cinquefoil, Potentalia reptans, again, creeps like mad. You can see this long stolon here, this overground creeping stem. That's very distinctive, this plant. It spreads like mad on these long, long stolons. Again, quite a distinctive leaf, breaks up into five main sections. Again, a creeper and distinctive edges to the leaves as well. That serration is very easy to identify. This one often goes unnoticed, a very tiny little weed, parsley pear, Afans arvensis. Flowers are tiny, tiny, tiny little flowers, about 2 millimeters big. It's pretty much a rosette plant. Can grow pretty much anywhere. It tends to grow in areas that are reasonably moist, where you've got a little bit of bare soil, they will get in there, but can survive drought pretty well. But again, quite a distinctive plant. Very soft leaves, very velvety, covered in a very fine downy hair. So quite easy to identify. This one, again, you're not going to get this wrong. This is silverweed, Potentalia arcerina. The distinctive reason it's called silverweed, obviously, is its very silver colour. It's a very, very light grey, almost silver colour. The back of the leaf is a very pale white colour. Really distinctive. You have this long leaf with these leaflets all the way down, and the leaflets are very, very serrated, like the edge of a saw blade. Again, a creeper can take over areas very quickly. Problematic to spray because it does tend to be glossy surface, which is chemical, difficult to get herbicides to stick to the leaf surface, but not that usual, but does occur, reasonably common. This one, obviously very common, slender speedwell Veronica filiformis. Again, a creeper on stolons. This one's a bit of a pain. Speedwell does have a habit of, if you cut it or part of the stem breaks off, it can re-root very quickly into the surface, particularly in damp conditions. So if you've got a little bit and you start mowing it, it will actually spread it around a bit. It's almost like moss and fragmentation. It will establish very quickly. Easier to identify these very round and very small leaves, and obviously grows in quite large clumps. Back to the plantains. This one's hoary plantain. Now, why is it called hoary plantain? Well, the old English hoary means furry or hairy. And this one's covered in a very fine surface of grey down, very, very, how would you describe it? Almost a velvet-like surface. It's a very much a rosette weed, different from, sort of similar shape to greater plantain, I suppose. But, as I say, This distinctive colour, the sort of greyish colour from all the little hairs on it, make it very, very distinctive plant. So Plantago media. You've probably got this one on your golf course somewhere. Broadleaf dock, Rumex obtusifolius. Again, rosette habit. Leaves are large and glossy. This is the one that you've supposedly rub on your skin. You spit on it and rub it on your skin if you've been stung by a stinging nettle. Probably did that when you were a kid. So again, nice, easy one to identify. Lastly, before I go in, spear thistle, again, a rosette growth habit. Leaves are covered in very fine hair, and the edges of the leaves are covered in fine spines that will penetrate the skin. So if you step on it or you touch it, you know about it. It's extremely painful. Again, distinctive rosette growth habit. They can grow to quite a large size, but generally speaking, they're in close-cut turf. You sort of talk about 5 inches across, but they can get much bigger. So just a bit on control. Obviously, you may get that question in the exam, or you might be asked that question during your EPA, you know, how would you control this weed? Well, cultural controls, you do something about the cause. So the underlying cause for broadleaf plantain would be compact soil. So if you could aerate the soil, that would be really good, because obviously that would encourage the grass and you have less problems with the plantain. physical methods, hand weeding, you know, actually taking the weed out with a knife, etc., use of verticutters, scarifiers. Over time, that the weed, the fine leaves of the grasses will fit between the blades, but the weeds won't, and a chopping action over the leaf surface over time can starve some weeds out. I wouldn't say it's a brilliant way of doing it, but for some weeds, it can be an effective control measure. Chemical, obviously, using a selective hormone, herbicide, weed killer, 2,4-D, Mecacrop, dicamba, chlorpyrifos, etc. But please, in your exam, do not put glyphosate. I see that written all the time. Glyphosate, yes, spot treatment very carefully, you know, if you had a large rosette type weed and you can avoid getting it on the grass, maybe, but glyphosate on turf, obviously it will kill the turf as well. So it's not a great choice for trying to control weeds in turf. As I say, unless you've got a really, you know, large weed and you can spot treat it very carefully. Otherwise, no, use a selective hormone. Obviously, there's a load of websites that resources if you want to take this further. You can research controls, you can research the sort of more on the identification of them, etc. You can access this at the end of the training session. So if you want to go back and look at these links, I do recommend some of them. Barenberg's got some really good stuff on grass seeds and why they're used, etc. Recommend that. And again, Bayer, they've got some good stuff on weed control, pest control, etc., etc. Good stuff for your EPA. So that's the end. I don't know how we've gone time-wise and whether we've gone over or slightly under.
We have got a few questions. Thanks for that, Andy. I was trying to pay attention, but, you know, I'm thinking there's a couple of those weeds in my garden, definitely. So I have a question. Somebody who actually missed the first half of the webinar, okay. They have been informed that they can catch up with it. But they've got their endpoint assessment coming up and they're a bit nervous about it. Right. And they would like to know exactly what will happen during the EPA. Is that something that you can do a quick overview of?
I can, because I am an endpoint assessor myself, so I can go through that. There's two factors you need to consider. One is you're probably with sitting guilds, but you could be with Lantra. There are two EPA organisations. They run almost exactly the same. The only difference is with Lantra, if you're with Lantra, they do the identification using photographs in the exam. So with Lantra, you'll get photographs of the grasses. From various angles, photographs of the seeds, which will look very similar to the ones I showed you today because I took the photographs for the exam. So they will do that with photos and you may well get some weeds. Certainly in the EPA exam, you're going to get whoever you're with, you'll get photographs of the weeds for sure, be the common weeds. So on the EPA for the City and Guilds EPA, you will have to identify the five grasses. If you want me to run for it, what happens is on the day of arrival, I would have worked out with your employer the three practical tasks I want to see. So let's say I choose scarification, mowing a green, and top dressing a tea. So I'd want to see those three tasks, and I would watch you do that. You hopefully would give me a risk assessment at the beginning of each one. That is critical. So you don't have to give me a huge long list. You just need to tell me some of the risks before we start. Most assessors will prompt you on that as well. Is there anything you want to tell me before we start? If they say that, just make sure you go through the risk with them. Just general risk, you know, cutting your feet on the machinery, etc. We will watch those three tasks being done, and then we will either pass, fail, or whatever you grade you. We won't tell you the grade. That's the thing that everybody needs to know. You do not get your grade on the day of the EPA, because we have to go back and have it checked by everybody else. So it's got to be very fair. But you get your grade usually within about 7 days. So apart from the practical task, on the day of the EPA, you'll also be asked to identify five grasses and four seeds if you're with sitting guilds. If you're with Lantra, you won't be asked to do that. You'll then walk me from the tee to one green on your golf course, and that's a hole of your choice. So you'll walk me down that golf course, and we'll start on the tee, and I might ask you about how you set up the tee markers, all that sort of stuff. You'll walk me down the fairway, I might ask you how you mark out of bounds, all that sort of stuff, because you're supposed to know all the markings on the golf course, you know, out of bounds, drop zone, GUR, water hazards or water penalties, as now called, etc. You can talk to me as we go down. You can tell me about the soil type, the grasses. You know, you might say to me, well, here, can I identify some grasses with you? I might do that. I might point the grass out to you and ask you to identify it, whatever. But certainly you'll at some point have to identify those five grasses and four seeds. As we go down the golf course, we'll be looking at the fairways, and then I'll ask you about what operations you may have done. Now, this is your chance to shine. As I always say to apprentices, the more you can talk to me and tell me about what you've done on this hole in the last year, the higher your grade will be. So if we walk down that golf course, you can tell me the height of cut. Well, you've got to tell me the height of cut of the tee, the fairway, the green, etc. You can tell me what operations you've done and why. So you say, you know, we verticut the greens last week to try and, you know, get a better playing surface and take some of the thatch out. We verti drained the fairways because they're not particularly well draining on this hole, and we infilled that with sand to improve the soil. And then you can go on all those operations that you've done. You know what you've done on that hole. Describe those to me. And the more you describe, the higher your grade becomes. We'll get to the green. I'll talk to you about, you know, hole changing and that sort of stuff. You'll tell me about some of the rules involved. That then will end what we call the course walk. Then I'll ask you to do some marking out, GUR, out of bounds, etc. So obviously we go down to somewhere on the practice area and you could just show me how to mark out GUR, that sort of thing. What else would you need to do? So we've got course markings, the course walk, the practical task, measure the speed of a green as well. That's something you have to do. Make sure that when you measure the speed of the green, you use the appropriate system, and that is to roll three balls in one direction, take the average, roll three balls back in the opposite direction, take the average, and tell me the average speed of the green. Okay, so I've had people in the past who've only rolled the balls one direction. One guy told me it was about 16 foot speed of the green because it only rolled it downhill. That's going to be a fail. So make sure you know how to reach speed of a green as well. So that would be pretty much it. I mean, if you've been on working on a golf course for almost 2 years and you can do everything that's in your GTC manual, you just sit back and relax because you will pass, and you just got to be calm, collected. Let, you know, almost lead the assessor if you like. You tell him all you know. If he wants or she wants to know a bit more, they'll prompt you. But just relax and enjoy it. It's a, you know, all the guys I've done have had a great time doing it with me, and it's been a really good experience for them, and they've really showed me what they know and what they can do. And to be honest with you, the only way you can get a fail is not be able to read the speed of a green, not be able to identify your grasses or seed, or make some kind of catastrophic fail. One thing I will say for all people listening, if you're using a piece of equipment on your EPA, for God's sake, make sure that piece of equipment is safe. And if it's got a seatbelt fitted, wear the damn thing, right? If you've got a roll bar and the seatbelt's there, that seatbelt's got to go on. Even if you're taking the assessor out on the buggy, if there's a seatbelt in that buggy, you put that seatbelt on, because if you don't, you're risking a fail, okay? So just make sure you do everything by the book. You've got your steel toe caps on, you've got your seatbelt on, as you would anyway on a day-to-day basis. If you do all that, you'll have no problems with the EPA, I promise you.
So I've got two questions on that, Andy. Firstly, how will the apprentices know if they are on City and Guilds or Lantra? Will they find that on some paperwork?
Well, hopefully. Hopefully the provider would have told them. It should be on their individual learning plan, and the employer would have made that choice because it's the employer's choice. 99% of candidates at the moment will probably be with City and Guilds because they were the first. There might be the odd one or two who would Lantra, but I doubt that at the moment. There will be now, but they won't be coming up for the EPA yet.
Okay. And my second question on that, I'm not sure whether it's a question or a statement really, or an offering of advice. To do the course walk, I would suggest that it would be very good to go out with your peers, your course manager, your deputy, other members of the team, and actually walk the hole with them and discuss the hole with them from start to finish on several occasions before doing your endpoint assessment, so that they can pick up on things and they can explain things to you as well that have been happening that you may not be aware of. So you can then, as an apprentice, you can then question them on what's been happening on the whole as well.
Yeah, that's really good advice. The other thing is most assessors should understand the EPO process by now and should be familiar with what will happen. Quite a lot of assessors at colleges are EPAs themselves, so they should be able to give you a good introduction to the coursework. Yeah. But yeah, like I say, it's the coursework is nothing to fear. One thing that you should be aware of for those on the sitting guilds is occasionally you'll be asked to identify 35 plants on the golf course. Now that can be any 35 plants on the course, and they are at your choice. So you could include a stinging nettle, you could include an oak tree. As long as you can do any 35 plants by their common name, that will be okay. Obviously, you can stick some botanical names in there, the grade will go higher. But that is one of the assessments that can take place, is the 35 plant ident. That's one that scares a lot of people.
So that's one that when you're practicing your chosen golf hole, that you can actually figure out what is around that hole and talk about it as you're going along.
Yeah, I mean, you can move off that hole, because sometimes you'll have a hole that won't actually have 35 plants on. So yeah, it's quite permissible to choose plants around the clubhouse or anything. It's just any 30. Just make sure you can do 35 plants by common name. If you can do that, you're laughing.
Yeah. Okay, good. Back to some other questions. So we've got a question here saying, are there any good publications on weeds?
Yeah, I mean, Bayer have got a really good website on weeds. Simple books like, what's it called? The Lawn Care Expert. I know that's a bit of a basic amateur book, but that's a really good site to have a look at. Obviously, if you're at my college, then obviously we've got our Canvas that you can have a look at, all the PowerPoints on there with all the weeds on. But yeah, just generally, most of the chemical manufacturers, so we've got people like, as I say, Bayer, I'm trying to think of some of the other good ones. Most of them on their websites will have all the weeds. In fact, if you just Google turf weed identification, loads of stuff comes up. Yeah. Publications wise, I think if I remember rightly, Bega have also got their...
We've got field guides. I was just going to suggest that. So the field guides are available from Bega, and I believe that they are still available to view on our website as well. However, I might be wrong about that, because we have updated the website.
The other thing is, when your sales rep comes in, have a word with them, because quite a lot of them can get hold of the weed identification posters. They're really good. I'm trying to think of the company that produced them, but just have a word and see what your local sales rep will do. They've got quite a lot of stuff they can give you.
And also, again, talk to your course manager as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You never know, he might have his own private library at home. So
yes, anything like my course manager husband, we've got a bookshelf full of turf books. So all fascinating. I've read them all, of course. let's see what else. Are the updated field guides now in print? Yes, they are. So you can request a bigger field guide if you're a member, then they are free of charge and we will get one sent out to you. Slightly more challenging at the moment as our office is closed, but we do have somebody going into the office every now and again. So if you did want a copy of the field guides, please email info@bigger.co.uk and we will endeavour to get those out to you as soon as we can. I think that's it for the questions, Andy. We've been going a good hour and a quarter. So we really hope that you've enjoyed it and found it beneficial. Obviously, if there's anything that Bigger can do to help you with your endpoint assessments or to supply any training aids, please let us know and we will do our best to help you out there. This webinar will be available to watch again on the Bigger website. So please watch it as many times as you wish. It is a member benefit, so you will have to log into the website to be able to view it. All apprentices are members of Bigger. So please use your bigger membership because it is very valuable to you once you get into knowing what it is that we're all about. Please spend some time and give us a call if you've got any questions around your membership benefits. So I'd like to thank you all again for joining us. Thank you to Andy. It's been very informative, and we hope that you'll join us again soon. For details of future Continue to Learn extra webinars, please visit the What's On page of the Bigger website. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Green Room Golf Course podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of Bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of Bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.